This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni, Jimmy's number 43, the Good Beer Seal. It is Tuesday, March 27th, 2018. We've got some great guests joining us tonight. Big shout out to Brian Strumke, our brother. He's putting down roots here in Brooklyn, New York City. He got married to Bryn. Hey, Brian. Hey, Bryn. How are you guys?
We're good.
Doing great.
It's kind of big news, and you're literally putting down roots with a brewery that you're going to be opening in Greenpoint called Production by Stillwater, and they're looking forward to that in 2018. Congratulations, Brian.
Thank you.
And that's going to be a big focus of our show tonight. And joined by guests, we got, this guy happens to be a master Cicerone. I know a number of you out there have taken it and not got it, but Rich did. How many times did you take that, Rich?
I took it twice, yeah.
It's twice.
It's not too easy, but... Try again.
And you're in town, what? You're doing some tastings and trainings?
That's right. Yeah, I'm in town for just a couple days in New York this week. I'm stoked, though. I had a great tasting last night at Treadwell Park. Tomorrow night at 6:30, I have a cheese and beer pairing, Old World versus New World beers and cheeses at ABC Beer Co. in Alphabet City.
And I'll be there.
That's right. Cool, man.
Excellent. Yeah, and our good buddy, Dan LaMonaco. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going?
Beer Karma Bar, Williamsburg.
Very excited. Last time I was here, we were not yet open yet, so I'm excited to be here.
Congratulations.
An open and operating beer shop owner.
All right, and we have some special guests too. We made a donation to Slow Food NYC. Diane and Barry, they're in our studio. They paid big bucks to have a craft beer day with Jimmy. So you too, just come with a bar at Roberta's any Tuesday at 5:00, and you might get lucky too. All right, so guys, okay, thank you. All right, so Production from Stillwater. Brian Strumke is going into Production. So, you know, let's tell your backstory, Brian. I mean, you've been on the show a lot. It seems like everyone knows what Stillwater is. You've been a gypsy brewer. You got a special project going on that those of us in New York City are really excited about.
Yeah, this is it's pretty much going to be like my experimental fermentation laboratory. It's actually not going to house a brew house, and we're just going to do fermentation and wood aging. From mixed culture beers, and also dabble into fermented food products and other beverages like kombucha and tonics and such.
That's great. So you found a spot in Greenpoint?
Yeah, it's on Kingsland and Norman.
So that's not too far in Greenpoint, right? It's not too far from Torst.
Yeah, it's not. It's about 10 minutes from Manhattan Avenue walking.
Yeah. I mean, you've made some great stuff, sours and barrel-aged stuff over the years. I mean, I know Dan... Beer Karma here, you're a big fan of Stillwater.
Yeah, the beers are fantastic. They sell really well, which always helps. A combination of being interesting beers and easy to sort of introduce people to them. The art also pops on a lot of the packaging as well. We've got a couple of them here. The Stillwater Insetto is one that looks great. It kind of looks like a Beatles on the label, and then the extra dry.
Call that bug juice.
Bug juice, yes. And then the extra dry is another one that sells really well for me. Is the sake style saison. I brought a can of that. That one always pops out of the fridge as well.
What's the first beer that we're drinking?
This is the Hop Fine Bling. It's sour ale with Sauvignon Blanc grapes.
Oh yeah, dry hopped with Galaxy and Nelson Sauvin.
Where do you get your ideas for beer, Brian?
No idea.
I mean, that's a dumb question, but it's a good question for you.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, right now I've been on a kick. I've always been into sour and funky beers, but I drink a lot of wine as well. So I've been really trying to hybridize and bridge the gap between beer and wine. So I've been doing a series like Hop Fine Bling is Sauvignon Blanc. We have Ode Bay, which is a Pinot Noir sour. And coming up is a beer called Dry Cry, which is a dry Riesling inspired, dry hopped sour beer.
Oh, that's the one you're supposed to talk about, right? Dry Cry. on your
one day.
One day. And then Rich, you know, you kind of know everything about the beer world. You know, you're an expert taster.
I wish. There's too much to know these days. Jeez,
you're a massive cicerone. Come on.
It's hectic. It's hard to follow all this stuff. But Brian, I'm stoked about this beer. This I really like the Galaxy hops in here. They really, the sort of lemongrass notes from the Galaxy hops really picks up on the lactic acid in here and sort of just makes it more than just sort of a lemony, yogurty, tangy beer. And then on top of that, you got the grapes in there, which added a lot of interesting stuff too. So, bravo! It's good stuff.
Thank you.
Did you, Rich, know that they're Galaxy hops by taste, aroma, or did you read the can?
I didn't read the can, but I did listen to my my friend Brian here. But no. I mean, this is overall an extremely citrusy beer, and it's not just sort of a one note lactic beer. That's got a lot of interesting stuff going on beyond just the lactic.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of dry hopping my sours. I just think it adds another dimension. And so a lot of times, you know, just straight sours can kind of leave a little funkiness on the nose.
Yeah.
So the hops are kind of there to kind of cover it up and just give a floral bouquet.
Sure. Yeah, I love it. You know, I mean, the old world really has a lot of fantastic sours, but you know, they're not really all about dry hopping them. And sometimes, you know, American brewers sort of jump the shark trying to get creative with old world styles, with twists on old world styles. But that's a natural progression, putting some, you know, nice floral and citrusy hops in a beer that already has a little bit of tanginess to it.
Yeah, I think it sets it off and it kind of accentuates the fruit and the grape. And I try to do that. like we have tangerine haze here as well. It's a tangerine dry hop sour. And that one was obviously I used some Citra and some Mosaic.
Perfect.
In that, because it's, you know, I try to like match the fruit with the hop.
Yeah.
And then adding the acidity in, you know, doing a kettle sour or extended aging with lacto or something, I think really helps to bring the fruit alive, kind of gives it a zing.
Well, it helps to focus it. You know, I mean, a lot of these IPAs, you know, hop forward beers just have so much citrus going on, but it doesn't have any acidity. So the citrus skews sort of super ripe.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's a complaint a lot of people have about like a lot of California wines, for instance, from the 90s, were just like jammy fruit bombs. They didn't have any acidity.
Too fat. It's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, with sour beers coming into play, and it just triggers our taste buds. Regardless, we crave acidity.
Yep, for sure. But fortunately, it's still, you know, a bready beer. It's got, you know, it's unfiltered, it's hazy, it's got all that sort of nice bready doughiness, too, to bring it back into the beer realm.
How does the double dry hop interact with the sour?
What's that?
How does the double dry hopping, like, interact with the sour?
I mean, that's pretty much what we were just talking about.
I know, but I want you to say it again.
It's like, you know, it's basically, you know, when you get, like, a juicy IPA, and, you know, the hops are really juicy and such, well, if you dry hop with the same hops and like in a quote, you know, New England juicy IPA, you're going to get a real juicy beer because it's like, then you have acidity also going in with it.
Think of a watermelon agua fresca. It's super sweet, super fruity, but at the end of the day, it's not, you know, it's refreshing because it's watery, but it's nice to have something like a lemonade or something that's a little bit more sour too. That acidity helps tighten things up and make it a little brighter.
Acid.
I want to hear how Bryn describes it, because you're like an expert wine person.
What am I describing? The flavor difference?
Yeah, like, you know, when I ask, I mean, I'm asking because when Rich says it's like lyrical, and I'm sort of thinking, what's a watermelon agua fresca?
Well, here's the thing. Watermelon's actually a trigger for me as a former beverage director, because putting it in a cocktail is a nightmare. By itself, it's sort of, it has this like mouth coating kind of flabby feeling, and you need citrus to lift it. Otherwise, it sits there kind of like film. It's really gross. So lime juice, lemon, something to brighten it up. Similarly, you could compare that to this situation, because technically all booze is related.
So let me, in my words, so this is a double dry hop beer, but because there's sour base, it's goes down better.
Oh no, it's just different. And it's just right. It's just single dry hopped. It's not even that extremely dry hopped, because I find that the acid from the souring process accentuates the hops as well. So you don't have to use as much.
Dan, when, you know,
What I was going to say just in general about this kind of beer and kind of a lot of things that come out of Stillwater is that they're envelope pushing, but with direction, I feel like. They're not just sort of over the top for the sake of being over the top for someone to be like, I want to try that. It's like a sour ale with Sauvignon Blanc grapes is different, but it makes sense. And it's something that, it ends up being a fantastic beer, but it's a reason for someone to try it as well. So it kind of, it does both things. It lets people say like, I want to try this, and then they have it and they're like, wow, this is awesome. It's not just a strawberry marshmallow vanilla milkshake IPA. It's unfortunately that is a real thing. They make sense to me, and that's what I enjoy about when I'm buying Stillwater beers.
And what about selling them? I mean, how do you explain it? You know, people know Stillwater. I would order Stillwater.
So one of my people always want to know, especially now that there are more breweries in New York City, they'll say, well, where is Stillwater? And I kind of chuckle and I say, well, they're kind of based out of Maryland. They brew a lot of Connecticut all over the place, but the brewer lives around the corner because Brian actually lives a few blocks away from the shop, and him and one of his right-hand men kind of come in frequently. So that's always kind of
drink all the Orval.
Yes, he drinks. Yes, Brian. Yes, whenever I'm always triggered to buy more Orval after Brian stops in. That's always the first conversation, but then it's always like with the Extra Dry, for example, when people ask like, well, is this a good beer? I'm like, it's great because it's subtle and has a lot of nuance, but it's also easy drinking. So if you're grabbing the boxed four packs, you could bring one to a party and share with friends, and they're not going to dump out half the can because it's too sour or too hoppy or too offensive.
You have that hybrid format, so you're a bar but you're also a store.
Yes, I'm hybrid. We're from retail and both on premises. I don't know I do get stuff on draft occasionally, but yeah, I tend to buy a lot of packaged stuff from Brian. There's always stacks of Extra Dry and Insetto, and whenever there's the Hotline Bling sells out really quickly, so I can't sort of buy it on demand. I stocked up on it this last time. I learned my lesson the first time when I bought a case, and then
it's my favorite.
It's very good. I learned my lesson that it was like, oh, I'll try this out, and then it was gone, and then it was sold out entirely. So I stocked up on it this time.
And how do you describe where you're based now, Brian? Everyone likes Gypsy Brewer, and it's almost like every other Gypsy Brewer is opening a brewery. What are you? I like Gypsy Brewery.
Well, I mean, my nomadic life is not really gonna change. It's another project that, we're working on, and I have partners, helping me unfold everything. So I don't know. We're still venturing out. I'm planning to start a line of beers in Europe for Stillwater, and we're still traveling to Asia, Australia later today. I mean, not today, but later this year. Jesus, that flu is getting in my head.
I think Brian puts it perfectly when he describes Stillwater as brewed locally, comma, somewhere. So it can be local to wherever it's from, or local because we happen to be in town, or anything.
Yeah, I mean, New York has been a home to me for over 5 years now, so it just seemed obvious to do something in Brooklyn.
That's a great quote. Brewed locally somewhere. I like that.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm with Banksy here. I'm really into Banksy. You guys don't know that, but it kind of made me that he was back in town. So if anybody's interested in Banksy, keep me in the loop. So Brian, when you first started, I remember, we met years ago. You came to we did a Belgian tasting at Jimmy's number 43. I think you first had cellar door.
Yeah.
Were you ever brewing in Europe back then?
Yeah, my funny enough, I think it was my second release was brewed in Belgium.
Yeah, that's what I remember you as. I always thought of you as American dude who was you were gypsy, so you could brew in Europe.
Yeah, I took the whole approach that from the music industry that when I was signed to record labels, most of them were in Europe, and the product we were selling was vinyl records because it was for DJs, techno and house music. When that industry shifted to digital, that's kind of when I faded out. And I wanted to get into an industry that made tangible product. And I saw the beer industry as a unique way to disrupt something that has very traditional roots and hasn't changed a lot over the years. And I guess my prediction was right. I mean, we saw what happened in the last 10 years with the beer industry. It's like,
yeah, it's crazy.
It's like we killed the original concept of what craft beer is and then made it something.
And nobody's doing a 3D printed version of beer, right? It's real beer. Yeah, not yet, right? Rich, you're in town and you're doing these cool tastings and things. Tell us more about this old world versus new world tasting tomorrow night, because I think it's kind of relevant to what Brian's doing and Brian's beers.
Yeah, sure.
He likes Orval. I love Orval.
Yeah, Orval I could drink all day. But so the tasting is basically structured around. So I sat down with Zach Mack, the owner of ABC Beer Co., certified Cicerone, amazing guy, and said, look, you know, there are all these great beers that are brewed in New York. There are all these great beers brewed in Europe. You know, let's explore the differences and similarities between them. So we've picked three different styles. We're doing Pilsners. We're doing hop-forward beers, IPAs, basically, and barrel-aged sours. And saying, all right, within these three styles, let's pick one European version, as well as, you know, that's imported to New York, and then one local New York version. Taste them side by side. Figure out what the differences are, sort of the old world, you know, kind of origins, the terroir that's expressed, as well as kind of how the New York craft scene is taking, you know, putting its own stamp or imprimatur on those beers. And then we're pairing each of those styles with a different cheese and try to have the cheese kind of link the old world and the new world version of each. So it should be fun.
I'm a big fan. ABC Beer Company. It's in Avenue C and 6th Street,
yep.
East Village. And then what's this beer? It's a tangerine what? I'm digging it.
It's the tangerine haze. You're still drinking Hop Vine Blend.
Oh,
I am? No, I poured in some haze.
Oh, okay.
Tangerine haze.
Tangerine haze.
What's up with this?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's very similar to, you know, the same approach to Hop Vine Blend, where it's, this time it's, you know, a sour with tangerine. It's a little, this one's a little heftier. It's about 7% alcohol. So it's bigger than typically a sour beer would be. I originally kind of wanted this to be like a sour. I kind of labeled it as like a sour tangerine IPA. And it just, I don't know, people just didn't jive with them. Like the marketing of that, they're like, that's not IPA enough. Or like, this IPA is sour.
I'm
like,
everyone likes to pigeonhole stuff, right?
The label said that. But now we just call it a juicy dry hop sour ale with tangerine.
All right.
How do you get that tangerine in there?
Concentrate.
Okay.
And we're going to talk more about this in a minute. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. Become a member. There's a lot of benefits. Like, you can come to Roberta's Tuesdays at 5 o'clock. Come sit in with Beer Sessions Radio. All right. So, Brian, we're tasting your tangerine haze. Again, so, Rich, what did you say? It's asked if it's any tangerine in there, or what's the main ingredients?
Yeah, there are a bunch of different ways to add fruit to beers, and tangerines, you know, the juice is kind of sweet and sour. The pith or the peel is where all the really most of the aroma is, but it's also super bitter. So I'm always curious how people add these fruits. But, yeah, so what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this one, a lot of mine I use concentrates. The batches are fairly large these days, so it's easier to work with.
Totally.
Trying to peel enough tangerines for 100 barrels of beer would be a little difficult. But
job creating.
Yeah.
That's small. True, job creating. Yeah, I could take little pieces of it and put it in a cake that I'm making. Tangerine rind. And it was great, man. You know, so it's could have been an IPA, but people didn't think it was IPA enough.
Well, I didn't really know. I didn't, you know, it's kind of hard to tell sometimes how people are going to react to descriptions, especially when you're hybridizing styles. So it's like, which word is going to catch better with the consumer, and what might turn them off, what might turn them on, what might confuse them. I usually go for the third.
All right. And then Dan from Beer Karma, great bar in Williamsburg, you just opened another Stillwater beer. Let's try that one.
Yeah, we opened up the Stillwater Extra Dry. This was the sake-style Saison. So I believe it's sake rice and then Saison yeast, Brian.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite beers. I've sort of hopped on the trend of drinking much lower ABV beers. Now that I'm drinking beer almost every single day, the sort of 7.5%, 8% double IPAs, I'm consuming less and less of. So opening up a can of this and drinking it in under 5 minutes at the end of my shift is very common.
You're also a part of like a running club too, right?
Yeah, I created a running club out of Beer Karma. Mostly Monday, every Monday night we're running, and then occasional Fridays. We're going to wait to do another Friday run until the weather warms up. But it's kind of a good crew. We're partnered with We Run for Brewer, Beer Runners Unite. We do a quick run leaving at 7 o'clock, and then we come out, we come back, drink some beers. I usually do some sort of special featured around a local brewery. And then there's always a little bit of a bottle share, not necessarily a heavy duty, but you know, people who've been to different beer releases or breweries over the course of the last week will bring stuff in, and then we'll open that stuff up, which Monday nights actually tend to rock a little bit, cause the neighborhood's a little bit chiller. So I don't mind keeping the doors open a little bit later. So sometimes my Mondays end up being a 1 a.m. kind of late night drinking. And a very hungover Tuesday morning.
So this whole trend of beer clubs, I noticed McKellar NYC is open in Queens. They already have a McKellar beer club.
Yes, they're all the McKellar Run Clubs all over the world. There's several chapters all over Europe and in the United States. I mean, it's kind of a one, runners are thirsty. You know what I mean? When you come back from a long run, one, if you're doing the long running, you tend to be in a little bit of pain. So you want a beer to both rehydrate and numb a little bit of the pain. And in general, it's about balancing it out. I mean, in the end of the day, beer's it's an inherently unhealthy thing. I mean, it's
you've earned it.
Exactly. I mean, that's part of it. So it's like, I mean, I run ultra marathons, and it's after I run 30 miles, I'm gonna drink a bunch of beer.
That's why you're so buff.
I don't know that I'm buff.
So what's your long run when you guys do the Monday nights?
We don't usually do two very long runs. We've been doing the McCarran Park track just closed. We've been doing interval workouts on the track, which is nice because it keeps people together. You know, if you're doing even a 3 mile run, people that are running a 7 minute mile versus a 9 minute mile are going to be spread apart. But being on the track, even though the workouts that I program tend to be very difficult, everyone's kind of together. It's a very like kind of fun, jovial experience, high-fiving each other when we're done. Everyone's panting and laying on the ground after doing the workouts.
Damn, but, so I need a Stillwater Extra Dry.
Yes, definitely sake. A Stillwater Extra Dry after.
So Brian, tell us about this. So you got sake, rice, inspirations. It makes a lot of sense.
It was, it originated with a collaboration that I did with Kiyuchi Brewery in Japan, the makers of Hidachino. And they also have a sake winery, I guess, on site, and a distillery, and so on. It's a pretty interesting operation. so we decided to make a hybrid of their sake, and a saison. Their sake was really bright and vibrant, like almost like citra, fresh citrus and such. So we use Citra Galaxy and Hallertau Blanc in that, in the dry hopping.
So it's inspired by their sake, or you're actually using their sake?
Yeah, well, when we did it there, we kind of introduced a Koji culture and also the beer itself. So it had some of the cultured rice. I guess it's a bacteria that ferments the rice, and we added that into the mash in order to kind of ramp this up and make it more realistic stateside. I just opted for sake rice and a Pilsner malt base. And it's, as you can see, it's like bone dry.
So do you put the rice in with the malt at that stage?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. And Brandon, you're not into everything. Oh. I know you know a lot about wine. So, you know, what do you think about the different, you know, beers that your husband makes? And
well, I got in trouble the last time I was on the show talking about wine versus beer. So I'm going to do it again. before I was with this lovely gentleman, I was not really a big beer drinker other than growing up in North Carolina where craft beer was a huge thing. So I kind of overbeered myself at a young age. but his beers I actually find incredibly nuanced, especially because I've been out of the scene for so long. I'm kind of exclusive now with Stillwater. So I love them. And I actually finish a beer now, which the last time I was on the show, I probably couldn't have said that, but I can drink a whole beer now with pleasure. but usually by itself, usually Hop Vine Bling. I like Tangerine Haze, and we just remade Pineapple Fields, which is my forever favorite. We did not bring
So talking
that.
About running and other rigorous activities that might make you, I think there are health benefits to beer. I know that on labels, TTB, you can't say that. But I know that a friend of mine is a orthopedic surgeon.
Vitamin B.
And he said that when Gatorade was created, basically it's a potion to put electrolytes back in your system. But he says that he can't say it as a doctor, but that beer has similar, you know, composition. So it puts electrolytes back in your system, whether you're working out or having a wild night. Is there any truth to that?
I honestly believe that. Especially low alcohol beer is extremely, it's a nutritious beverage. You know, it's grain, grain, yeast, you know, vitamins, hops. I mean, if you're at like 4% alcohol, it's pretty diluted. I don't know. Other than the alcohol component, I think beer is extremely nutritious and healthy.
Rich, any?
Can be. Look, I don't know about the milkshake beers.
Yes.
You know, the only thing in beer that's not particularly healthy is the alcohol. So, you know, if you can even have a couple sips of 12% alcohol Imperial Stout, and it's healthy for the first couple sips, and then the booze builds up. But yeah, as Brian says, you know, it's full of protein, full of B vitamins, especially if there's yeast involved. There's B1, B2, and B12. It's the only vegan source of vitamin B12 that's out there. So, you know, I mean, these are important things, but, you know, if you have too much alcohol, then that kind of negates a lot of the health benefits.
And it's a vegan product, mostly.
Mostly vegan.
Are your beers vegan?
Most of them. Yeah. There's lactose in a couple beers. So, yeah, I guess they're not.
Yeah. You know, someone reached out to us recently talking about lactose. So you use lactose to sour in some cases, right?
No, that's lactobacillus.
Lactobacillus.
That's a bacteria. Lactose is milk sugar. So milk sugar is unfermentable by Saccharomyces, which is beer yeast.
So
you add it
a
to
milk stout.
Yeah, you add it to beer to leave extra sweetness in body because it's unfermentable. So it'll stick around.
So you might make like an orange cream beer with lactose or something
totally.
Like strawberry milkshake.
A lot of breweries are doing straight up IPAs with lactose now. I mean, a lot of the other half beers that are coming out now are
some lactose in Wavy.
Yeah.
Let's try Wavy.
Brian, from what I've been told is that that a little bit of lactose in IPA actually helps bring out some of the hoppiness. Is it true? It's not necessarily just overly sweetness in some of the IPAs. I tend to prefer it in stouts than I do IPAs. But
In the U.S., we've gotten so good at drying our beers out. You know, our yeasts are highly attenuative right now, so the style basically is super dry, and that really became an issue on the West Coast. You know, the West Coast IPA is known for having, you know, 80 or 85% attenuation, which basically means that you start with a beer or start with a wort that's got a lot of sugar, and then you can convert most of that sugar into alcohol. So all of a sudden you're left with a beer that's really alcoholic and doesn't have a lot of sugar in there, and it makes the hops pop and taste super, super bitter. But now the swing back the other way on the East Coast, you know, the New England style IPA and all that is much, much softer. And they achieve that softness through, you know, leftover starches and dextrins and stuff in the beer from, from wheat additions or oat additions. But you can also add a little bit of lactose to, you know, intentionally sweeten it up a little bit and soften it and ripen up the fruit aromas you get off of those hops.
Emollient.
If we're looking for a good adjective. Yeah. That's what it feels like to me.
I thought it was a bad word. I'm not a brewer and I don't know like all the technology, but it's not a bad word, is it? Lactose in beer.
No.
It's
the same thing as we were talking about earlier with citrus. It's balance. So if you find something super hoppy, adding a little bit of lactose is going to give the depth of palate that makes people feel a little bit more satisfied, quote unquote.
Great. So this is the Wavy beer. We'll talk about that in a minute, but since we're talking ingredients, I'd like to talk about, you're going to be brewing in Brooklyn now, Brian, and, you know, there's access to some New York ingredients, hops, and grain growers, which you might get to work with. A farmer friend of mine who's up by Cooperstown, Paul Dench Layton, Violet Hill Farm, actually just sent out Brewer Alert, texted me at 4 o'clock. He's got 5 tons of Red Fife wheat that was destined for a mill, and they just canceled on him today. So any brewer that's in the Northeast region that wants 5 tons of Red Fife wheat to make a batch with, just will put the word out to Paul. But and I mentioned that earlier, Brian. You said you've made beer with Red Fife wheat.
Yeah, I did one for Dan Barber at Blue Hill at Stone Barns. apparently, his friends at Anson Mills had a messed up crop due to strange weather. And so the Red Fife actually malted in the field. So they sent it up to him. They're like, is there anything you want to do with this? It's the same kind of situation. And they called me up and asked if I wanted like 5,000 pounds of field malted Red Fife. And I said, sure. And we made a beer. It was like a amber farmhouse. I don't know. They might still have some bottles left of it.
So what did you do with it? I mean, you went up, you checked out the grain. It was malted enough for you? And did you have to
Yeah, it was malted enough. It was kind of still a little damp, and had a little funkiness. That's why I went for a Saison. But it was really cool. I just had it shipped sight unseen. I just checked it out at the brewery and figured out what to do with it.
But you know it was a good ingredient to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, it was worth giving it a try, at least.
Yeah.
That's super cool and super super innovative. I like that idea a bunch. Do you remember well enough? Do you know if there was good conversion?
Yeah, it was. It wasn't the entire base malt. So I think we were using something like 20% of the grist.
Okay.
And so it probably still maintained some starches that flowed over, and that's fine. You know, I don't mind some. I mean, today that's the key. Just
yeah, that's right.
Throw flour in there,
especially for a Dan Barber beer too. I'm sure he's happy to have some extra body in there. And
yeah, so it was nice. It was still a really lean dry beer. It was a little bit of caramel malts. It's kind of like in between an alt beer, German alt beer, and saison. But it came in around 7%, so it was nice. Some caramel, some bready malts from the Red Fife, and you know, some spicy yeast character.
Brian, we're going to start calling you the grain doctor.
Grain doctor.
We got an extra batch. We need Brian. That might be cool. So, opening the new place in Greenpoint, I mean, what innovative things will you be able to do?
I mean, the one thing that I'll be able to do a lot of that I haven't been really able to flex over the years is barrel aging, just wood aging in general. We'll have fooders and fooders barrels. We'll also have some stainless steel tanks, but I think we're really going to just concentrate on mixed culture fermentation, things that I haven't been able to use as still water out in the nomadic brewing world.
So you can, it's your environment, you can control it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rich, anything? You see a lot of people playing around with barrel aging and everything.
Oh, for sure.
Challenges.
Yeah. There's a ton of barrel aging stuff going on. But yeah, I mean, there are always challenges for every sort of technique you're going to do. You know, I think something that happens nowadays that this is sort of kind of one of the best times to be playing around with barrels, because if something sours up on you that you didn't intend to sour, you know, that's kind of okay. You just kind of change the name and reblend it with some other barrels, and you can get away with releasing still a very good beer in the market, or at least some segment of the market is perceptive of that. They're ready for it. You know, Dan, I'm sure you've sold a lot of different beers, and you get people in your store all the time that are either, you know, huge sour heads, or they don't want anything sour, but they still want some oak aging or something.
Yeah, sour is definitely the biggest thing they're looking for. I mean, not necessarily specifically wood, but you know, I think a lot of people, they'll start with something like the Insetto or the Hop Vine, and then want something funkier that's had a longer fermentation. They're not scared of coughing up a couple extra bucks for something like Crooked Stave or the Tilquin Goose, because they realize that there's more nuance that comes out of that long fermentation, that sure. long souring, yeah. rather than
it's like a pet nat as opposed to a champagne.
Nice. Yeah. I like it. Yeah, I was doing a training over at Taurus today. We were talking about the differences between kind of fresh sours or just the straight up lactose sours. It's pretty quick. It doesn't take any more time than brewing a regular IPA does, for instance, or a pale ale, whatever. So you can get a lot of good sourness in there, but it doesn't develop any real complexity of flavors, because there's no Brett activity.
You guys, Brian's getting cold. I'm getting cold too. David, there's no heat in this place. We better take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Hey, thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. This is Katie, HRN Executive Director, and I'm so excited to share with you our coverage from the Charleston Wine and Food Festival.
We are here live today at Charleston Wine and Food.
Join us as we talk all things food.
Come to Charleston, eat some seafood. Eat all of the seafood.
Chicken fried chicken with chorizo steak and salsa verde mashed potatoes.
So quintessentially like Southern fare. at its finest.
And have important conversations.
We're also talking about professional women in restaurants and how underrepresented they are, people of color in restaurants, and how they're not talked about.
We get real with Food Network's Manit Chauhan.
Balance is BS. I was told that I wasn't going to be bleeped out.
And find out about raising sugarcane with Chef Sean Brock.
It's like being Indiana Jones or something. You never know what you're going to find.
You'll come away inspired by the power of food and the food scene in Charleston. Here's Dr. Jessica B. Harris.
Food is constantly in flux. Food is always moving. Food is the only real lingua franca that we have that allows us to connect with other folks.
So tune in to Heritage Radio Network on tour at heritageradionetwork.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't go wrong.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Where do you get your podcasts? Well, you can just go to heritageradionetwork.org, but we're also on Stitcher and now on Spotify. So you can load up all your podcasts. I think we got 400. This is probably 426 or 7. Brian's been on quite a few, too. So welcome back. Strumke's going into production. All right. Opening up in Greenpoint, production by Stillwater. That's been a big feature of our show. We're talking about sour beers, things like lactose and versus lactobacillus. And Rich, you just poured us another beer. What's this?
Yeah, so this is called Helles Schlenkerla Lagerbier. It's a bit of a mouthful, even if you speak German, because it's in Frankish dialect, so Northern Bavaria. But anyway, it's a non-smoked beer that comes from a smoked beer brewery. And so they don't actually intentionally use smoked malt in this beer. It's the one beer they brew without smoked malt. It's kind of the way they wash their yeast free of some of the smoke, because they brew so many smoked beers that their yeast picks up some of the house flavor from their smoked malts. And then they can use this beer or this the same yeast in this beer and reduces some of the smokiness while at the same time imparting some smokiness into this beer. So that's sort of an academic way of saying this is a slightly smoky, absolutely delicious, bready, malty, pale colored lager that you can just pound.
Let me just
day.
Say this is a classic beer that I love for a long time, and there's a hint of smokiness, but it's very refreshing.
Yeah, my old bar manager for the bar I had in Baltimore. Referred to that beer as the beer with terroir.
Yeah,
because it's got the house flavor.
Yeah, it's micro terroir.
It's not a smoked beer, but it's just on all the smoked equipment, and the yeast obviously is transferred from there. So it's a terroir driven.
And I'm going to natural wine. So I was at the Raw Wines event last year or recently.
Very nice.
And
I've missed it twice now.
I noticed that there are some grapes that are grown in volcanic soil.
Etna.
The smokiness comes through into the wine.
Mm-hmm.
This is similar to this in a different way. I don't know. Yeah. Just tell us about that. Because I was fascinated that smoky wine.
Terroir exists pretty much everywhere. It's ubiquitous across, especially growing regions of any kind of variety. But hops have terroir. This is a huge conversation we've been having as we've been spending more time in Washington, the hop centric realm of America. But the smokiness obviously would become, if it's from volcanic soil, its history is of being burned. So you will drink a beautiful red wine from Mount Etna and it's going to seem a little bit savory or something different. But terroir can be tasted all across the board. Like you like mushrooms from one certain area, you know, it's morel season.
Yeah, but when you actually taste the smokiness in the wine, and I'm trying to bring that to this.
Yeah.
So.
Well, beer has the same. It's micro terroir, though. Like we were talking about, it's indoor terroir often because the yeast strains you're using they sort of build up their own flavors over time. So if you're contract brewing, for instance, like you're going to get a more streamlined flavor. But if you've been making the same thing the same way for centuries, it's going to impart that flavor whatever you do in that place.
That's how like a lot of the yeast strains that we're using today are basically just mutated versions of other yeast strains. I mean, Saccharomyces it's a type of yeast, but then there's all different variations of it.
Yeah, lager yeast like didn't exist on its own 500 years ago. It hybridized off of ale yeast and wine yeast.
Yeah, like for instance, like from what I understand, Duvel's yeast is a Scottish ale yeast. Nobody would ever expect that. It's like become like the pinnacle Belgian golden. And it's nothing similar to a Scottish ale, but that's
you wouldn't know it because they never ferment Scottish ales in Scotland at high temperature.
Yeah, that's true.
They don't have warmth in Scotland. The terroir of all this stuff is fascinating to me. Like you know, as a gypsy brewer, which you may or may not be from now forward, I guess. But you know, if you were to brew, if you were to brew any of these beers at the Hellertrun Brewery in Bamberg that makes Schlenkerla, their brewery's house flavor is totally going to affect your beers, and so you're not. You know, people that are looking forward to, you know, to buying some Hopfein Bling are not going to be able to get the exact same flavor that they're looking for. But it's an excuse to, you know, show off the micro terroir or the personality of all these different breweries. So it's a fun opportunity.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite beers. I went to the brewery, I think late last year, with my friend Sebastian from Freigeist.
Oh, nice.
And we just went off over Franconia and just. To the Zeugels and just crushing lager
That's
for like 3 days.
Super fun. Yeah. Well, let me dovetail that into a little plug for my own trips. I'm leading educational beer tourism trips to Belgium and Germany, and Bamberg is one of the places that we visit. They're 2-day deep dives into different significant regional, you know, cities that represent subregions of beer culture in Europe. So we visit Brussels, we visit Antwerp, we visit Bamberg, Regensburg, Munich, Dusseldorf, and Cologne. Super different places. They love to hate on each other, but guess what? The beer's good everywhere. So it's a great way to learn about different beers by heading over there.
Wow, man. You're getting to do so many great things, Rich.
Yeah, I'm pumped. I'm pumped. You know, I mean, there's enough good beer out there. Enough people are interested in good beer, so I'm happy to be any part of it.
Good. Let's just go back to the wavy beer. So Stillwater Wavy. Tell us about that, Brian. Brian's a trooper, man. He's got a fever. He's dying, but he's here.
Yeah, it's DayQuil. DayQuil and this beer that I got down with when I got here. Wavy is it's a way for me to experiment with hops. It's a double IPA but with a little bit of lactose, and I basically every time we brew it, I use three hops, but I always change them up. And it's just a way to kind of have fun. People always want new beers, new IPAs, and little changes. So it's kind of fun. We release it in every batch, has the batch number and then a little three abbreviations of the hops that we used.
Do you have that at Beer Karma, Dan?
I do not currently have this in stock. I'm admittedly anti-lactose in IPAs, so I tend not to buy many IPAs with lactose in them. I have had it in stock once, though. But yeah, I generally speaking, occasionally I'll get something that has a little lactose in it, but I tend to avoid it. As we were saying earlier, with the sweetness that it adds, I kind of feel like most of the East Coast IPAs are already leaning really sweet. So my personal preference is that I tend to avoid the fruited IPAs and the lactose IPAs. So it's sort of my beer selection is a reflection of what I like.
So
and I enjoy,
when you're buying beer, how do you know that? I mean, do you just ask?
Sometimes I ask. Sometimes I, you know, when there's an offer sheet, I tend to do some digging. I'll look into like Instagram posts, and I'll look into sort of what sometimes when the distributor sends stuff, they don't include all that. So I'll do some of my own personal research to sort of dig to see if the new fruity tropical IPA is tropical because there's passion fruit added or because they're just using New Zealand or Australian hop varieties. So I'll do some digging into that. And sometimes I will ask that question because sometimes it's not particularly clear because they're trying to push the tropical thing for the New England IPA. It's doing my own research on that.
Great. And then now, what the Brewers Association announced all their new style guidelines. So there is a new style called, is it hazy and what?
Yeah, hazy and juicy.
Hazy and juicy, but is it hazy and juicy pale ale, hazy and juicy IPA? There's three categories. Yeah, hazy and juicy double IPA.
Those are the three, yeah. It's great. Hazy's time has come.
Mm-hmm. I've always liked hazy beer. Honestly, back when we started Stillwater, I was always having a hard time keeping the haze in my saisons because I always thought it added a really, you know, an extra mouthfeel. And when a beer drops too clear, it kind of thins out a bit. I don't find it shocking that is it's a popular thing right now. I mean, I think people have to do it right. When I see glasses of beige, like
Caesar salad dressing,
bone broth looking things, I'm like, that's not right, and it doesn't look appetizing. But a proper hazy IPA looks like, you know, pulpy orange juice. Like, I'm totally down.
It's a style that's gotten a lot of people excited about craft beer. I think it's one of those things where sometimes there's a little hate in regards that, like, there are people just looking for hazy IPAs and that's all they want to drink. But at the same time, it's something that's gotten people interested that they were vodka soda and Bud Light drinkers. Now all of a sudden they're looking for local craft beer because they like hazy IPAs. So it's something that really got people on the hook to not just occasionally have a craft beer, but really go and seek out that kind of stuff. So I think it's a great thing.
It's using beer flavors and beer ingredients to make a bigger tent. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Who knew that opacity was the gateway drug?
Yeah.
Right?
Wait,
it's the same
yet.
Thing in wine these days. People are like, is it unfiltered?
Wait, Rich, say your thing again about the tent.
Well, let's make a bigger tent. And, you know, if we can expand the tent by using beer flavors and beer ingredients, then, hey, that's what we're doing.
And then, Bryn, what did you say?
I said, who knew opacity was the gateway drug?
And now Brian wants to.
Well, I think
I do that for you, listeners. That you want to hear these things more than once.
We live in an ultimately visual environment now, with Instagram being so popular. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a shocking thing. Like non-beer drinkers, when they come across like a picture of a beer that looks like orange juice, they stop. They're like, "What the hell is that?" And I think so. It was capturing attention that it, you know, because it was something different. It was digging into a new market. It was almost like when I changed my marketing a few years back. I gathered a lot of new fans because there was certain people that the original packaging didn't resonate with, but this catches the eye, you know, in a different way, and it also captured the eye of a different audience.
Well, you're talking about cans too for Instagram. This wavy is a really interesting, you know.
Shout
packaging.
Out to Mike Van Hall Appropriations.
No, the can art makes a huge difference. It's a great canvas for both art and for the breweries as well. It helps it pop. I mean, you were saying the Instagram culture of the sort of the hazy pour, but people are also looking for the can art for that. I struggle with that in certain beers. Is that like Grimm, for example, is like when I get draft, it moves really quickly, but not as fast as the cans because people want to go home and take a picture with both the can and the hazy pour. Just the hazy pour sometimes isn't even enough. But it's also been a canvas for local art. You see, you know, breweries like KCBC, they're using, I think it's Roy Halloway and Christy Borg do all of their art, and it's a consistent theme, and it's a great thing to sort of help stand out on the shelves as well.
Wow. Rich, what did you pour for us?
Well, yeah, I'll dovetail it with that conversation. I've poured actually something a lot of people haven't had in a little while, but it's an American Amber Ale, and this is Prohibition Ale from Speakeasy. So I'm out here in New York. I'm pumped to be here, but I'm coming out from San Francisco. I'd love to see some San Francisco brands and give them a little bit of love out here. So this is a brewery that's been around for a long time. They opened up in 1997. You know, they helped create the San Francisco scene and help kind of, you know, make sure that there was a career for me out in San Francisco. I'm pumped. I never worked for them, but I'm pumped about the beer. They fell on hard times last year and went into receivership. So they closed down and unfortunately had to let a lot of staff go. But a couple folks managed to stick around and shepherd the beers through receivership, and they found a new owner. So they're now they're back and better than ever, and it's really great beer. This beer won a gold at GABF for the American Amber category, I think in 2015. So it's a really solid beer. I mean, it's a gold GABF winner, so it's about as good as it can possibly get. So this is a style that brought a lot of craft drinkers into the fold, 15, 20 years ago. And it's still delicious, and I like to drink a lot of the newfangled stuff, but I like a lot of the old stuff too, because I'm an old fart, so I like the old stuff too.
Well, good. Thanks for sharing. One thing, I'm gonna go back to you. So you're a master cicerone. I know that there's people that are gunning for it. They've created this, you know, almost whatever level called advanced cicerone that a lot of people are going for. Mm-hmm. But as a master cicerone, you know, what doors does that open for you? I mean, you got to come on our radio show.
You know, it doesn't open a single door. It really requires personality and ability to represent beer. You know, I mean, I'm in this for the beer because, I mean, Master Cicerone, sure, you know, there are not too many of us right now. There are going to be more, which I look forward to. But having passed the Master Cicerone exam doesn't mean I know everything about beer. It means I know how to learn about beer. And you don't learn about beer unless you're passionate. And so I'm super stoked about this stuff, and I just want to spread the gospel about it. And so if I can get more people excited about beer, then I've done my job. And I'm constantly trying to learn more about beer because there's no end to the amount of stuff you need to know about beer. And the more you know about it, the more you're going to enjoy it. I promise you.
So great. I'm having fun with you. In fact, everything you say, I'm going to ask you to repeat, but not that. And then last night, so you've got the Old World versus New World tasting tomorrow. Last night at Treble Park, another great beer bar in New York City. What was the theme of that tasting?
We did an off-flavors tasting. So I hate to harp on off-flavors too much because guess what? It's not the best part about beer, but it is, it's a reality about a lot of beer that it's not in the best condition. And so, you know, things can go wrong with a beer and it can end up developing a lot of different flavors that are just a little bit off. So it's nice to know how to spot them, how to taste them, and it's sort of an underbelly of the beer world.
So let's talk. So in terms of a brewery, so Brian, you know, in terms of brewery production, you know, are there any situations where there's an off flavor that you guys or your production partners have to deal with?
every once in a while, you know, we come across a diacetyl spike in a lager or something, and we have to let it ferment out a little more. But we do everything possible to not create all flavors, but, you know, occasionally people make mistakes.
Yeah. And what about for you, Dan, at a bar, do you ever get any, you know, beers with off flavors?
Or occasionally, yes. In general, I mean, a lot of the breweries now are very good about checking that and will dump beer. I mean, I know some local breweries that it sucks because they dump out 30 and 40 barrel batches when you're a small brewery. It hurts financially, but they're responsible about it. I've done some of the off flavor kits as well. I actually want to do another one now that I'm open for some of my regular customers because some of them are hard to sort of, when they're that prevalent, you're not necessarily going to get that in the market. There are certain ones like oxidation, which you may see a little bit more regularly.
Depends what you're drinking.
Yeah,
if you get a lot of imports, then those tend to be more oxidized because
they're more aged. You don't run into it terribly often, but I've had a couple of samples that dropped off and I was, you know, had to dump them down the drain because it was just not there. But, you know, generally speaking, it's kind of few and far between because I think people are brewers and breweries are much better about understanding that the market is more well educated now, that you can't just push that out to the market, that people are going to know.
There's a lot of quality control. I think that the quality level is just really high in terms of the beer in general. But I wouldn't know. I've sat on some of those off flavor tastings, but you know you could fool me.
I'm sorry to be unaware, but there are whole tastings dedicated to off flavors. That's what you're telling me.
There are kits that have like you spike a very light pale lager. Usually something. You usually do Bud Light, right?
You can spike whatever you want. The less flavorful the beer is to begin with, and the more easily you're able to pick out the variations. But I like to run these things with
this is amazing
with IPAs and barley wines and stuff.
You'll get a lot of newer breweries that are kind of just starting out. Sometimes, you know, maybe a small local brewery, they might have some defects and they may not know it.
Well, I think sometimes just educating it's the consumer on what
sometimes
unquote,
it's
bad
someone
like
a Dan at the retail end. You know, maybe they bought the keg and they're tasting it, and it'll come out that way.
You know, so I was a brewer for 10 years. I want to sort of protect brewers a little bit here. It's not just breweries that are the cause of some of these off flavors. It can also happen during shipping, during handling, and all that stuff. So beer that's stored warm, beer that's out of date, you know, things like that.
Clean lines.
Yeah, draft lines are a huge thing. Got to maintain and clean your draft
lines. I'm thinking
lines.
For staff too, as a previous restaurant manager, teaching your staff what cork tastes like in wine is like a years long battle because a lot of times somebody will never taste something that's corked and a guest will reject it, and you're like, I don't know what that is. This is fat. This is I'm utterly
no. That's
impressed.
A great
that's really
example.
Cool.
I wouldn't. I don't really know what corked wine tastes like either. Even
wet
though
newspaper.
You say that, but.
No, but that's the thing. That's what's great about the kits is that it kind of it's better to have one person that sees it. It will tell you, okay, you're going to taste these things. This is what it is, and then it's kind of nice. You sort of I know what it is, and the rest of you are trying to figure out what it is. Is it corn? Is it wet newspaper? Yeah, whatever it is. And then it also helps because someone will say something and you're like, ooh, right, that's exactly what I'm getting. I wasn't thinking of that.
You sort of group think it.
Yes. Yeah.
Come so then, Matt's just you're kind of a beer doctor too, right?
In a way,
answer our questions.
Well, beer is a rich doctor. Beer fixes me up and I fix up beer. So I want to give a shout out to Brian too. I just want to say, so I'm in New York doing a few different events out here. I love traveling, doing events. My first kind of tour I did was back in 2013, and I did an event in Washington, D.C. Pizza Paradiso, I think. Yeah. And I had a great time. It was a great event. It was sold out. I got a shout out in the Washington Post. I was super pumped, and then I found out after the event that this certain Brian Strumke had showed up at the event. I was like, what? Brian Strumke came? I drank the hell out of his cellar door. I love his beers, and I was so stoked that you were there. So thanks, man.
Which event was that?
It was
it's been a lot of events.
Oh,
in the last
I get it. Yeah. I think I called it track something about the rusticity and elegance. I'll come up with silly terms for beers, of course, but it was basically tasting a whole bunch of Belgian beers from Van Bergen to Wolf, and kind of charting out what they did well about them to make them very elegant and say like champagne-like and taut and focused and austere, as well as beers, you know, that also showed some rusticity at the same time. So sort of earthy notes, mushroomy tones, you know, wild fermentations, mixed fermentations,
maybe
things like that.
Saison DuPont.
Yeah, Saison DuPont. Yeah, perfect example.
Guys, let's make a toast to Brian Strumpy. Brian, production is opening this year for Stillwater out in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, man. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
We're cheersing with I would say this is my favorite Stillwater beer. This is the Insetto. This was the bug juice we mentioned earlier. It's a sour ale with Italian plum and dry hopped. This is one of my best sellers as well. This beer is amazing.
Thank you.
This is like the was it Rose. Josh Bernstein just did a whole like beer and rosé thing, and I mean this is kind of that perfect thing where it's a perfect summer beer for sure.
So how does this become your bestseller? Do you feature it? You put the cans out?
It's one of those things where a lot of times people will be like, "What's this beer?" Because it's the art pops. You could see it from across the room, but you have to pick it up and look at it and see who the brewer is, what the beer is. But it's also when someone says, "What is it? Is it just art?" I'm like, "No, the beer's awesome. Like you like trust me. It's a really beautiful color. It's kind of a light pinkish purple." Sometimes people are a little bit scared of like red and too purpley beers just because they think it's going to be a really sweet kind of too much fruit juicy, but this one just, it's super subtle, looks really nice in a glass, so I'm not ashamed of just pointing people to it, like, yes, get that, don't be shy with that one.
And we're going to give a big shout out, we have some special guests on the show. We're big supporters of Slow Food. You know, backstory on Heritage Radio Network: this original Slow Food founder from Italy, Carlo Petrini, inspired our founder, Patrick Barton, to work for him in Europe in the 1990s, and he came back to New York and founded Slow Food USA. And, you know, by extension, we're big supporters of Slow Food NYC chapter, and Barry and Diane at the recent Slow Food annual fundraiser bought the Craft Beer Day with Jimmy. So, guys, just want to say hi. I know you're big fans. Barry and Diane, to say hello.
Hello.
Hello, this is great.
You don't have to say how much you paid.
Worth the big bucks.
Yeah. Should have been like $500. But they've been sitting there the whole time. They're really enthusiastic. They're going to join us in Roberta's afterwards for some pizza. So anyone else want to wrap it up with anything? Rich, you got all your tastings. How do we keep up with you? You're at Malty Rich on social media.
Yep. Follow me at Malty Rich on Twitter and Instagram. Hit me up at richhiggins.com. It's my website. I put up all the stuff for my travel, my events coming up. I teach a ton of courses all over, especially San Francisco. Just a big fan of beer, so come join me.
Great. And if you're talking Slow Food NYC, April 3rd or 4th, a Wednesday night at Institute of Culinary Education, downtown Manhattan, their Slow Food Duck Cook-Off. I'll be there if you want to check it out, Slow Food NYC.
Just to wrap up our production sort of spotlight, we actually just launched an equity share crowdfunding campaign on growthfountain.com. It's growthfountain.com/production. You can see sort of how we're doing things, but it is an equity share, not just a Kickstarter. A really cool opportunity for everyone to get involved.
And let's just get our head around that. So it's, even though we know Brian Strumke's Stillwater,
yes,
the place is going to be called Production.
Production, yeah. It's a separate brand, but it will still be run by.
And we didn't get to talk about it too much, but so it's not a crowdfund. It's not like a donations. People are actually going to get equity.
You get double return on your investment in addition to rewards like you would a traditional investment. However, as of last May, it became legal to invest in not only brick and mortar locations, but also to invest quite a bit more money, both as an individual and as a collection of individuals. So we have donations up to $1 million, in which case you'll travel around with Brian to 3 countries.
But they're not donations.
Donations. It is an investment.
Yeah. We're calling it equity fund.
Equity funding. Yeah. So that one's really kind of the sexiest perk. Obviously, you travel with Brian
for $1 million.
For $1 million, you'll travel to 3 countries, make your own beer. It'll be released to the market, and
that means I get to travel with you too, Brian.
Yes, I'll be there to mediate.
So tell us one more time the link.
Growthfountain.com/production.
So for equity funding and the new. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And you can follow us on Instagram at production.brooklyn.
Great. And Brian, anything else you want to say? I know you're fading.
Yeah, man. I'm glad I made it out. It was a rough one today. Yeah, it's good to see you. And thanks for featuring me.
Yeah, man. It's fun. I think everybody was excited. We're lucky that Rich Higgins was in town. And I know Dan's a big fan of yours. And Dan, anything else? We've got the Monday Run night.
Monday Run is always fun at Beer Karma. Instagram, best place to see sort of beer updates. It's beerkarma.bstc. And then on Twitter, it's beerkarmanyc, which is both commentary from me about working in the beer world and then also beer updates. And just to Brian, I'm very excited. It's really exciting to sort of see sort of brick and mortar roots. I think it's important. I think you did a great job as obviously as a gypsy brewer. But, you know, now that more and more people are in touch with what beer is and where it comes from, I think they're excited to sort of come sit down and in Stillwater's actual space. Which is exciting.
Thanks. That's
Kingsland Avenue. If you haven't heard of it, I was like, where's Kingsland Avenue in Greenpoint? You're going to know where
it is. You'll know it soon enough.
Production. Well, and then
I know you said you're going to focus on a lot of fermentation stuff, but will there be Classique at the brewery?
We're bringing Classique back in June.
Fuck yeah.
I was going to say, if I went on a run tonight, which Stillwater would I drink? It'd probably be the Classique.
Well,
no?
It's not available right now.
No, it's been gone for almost 2 years, I think.
I would say extra.
I think this is going to continue. So, you know, you guys are going to keep talking at Beer Karma about which Stillwaters to drink. This is fun. Malty Rich, we're going to see you tomorrow night at ABC Beer Company, one of my favorite Good Brasil bars in Manhattan. And Brandon Bryan, we're going to see you a lot more coming up. And check us out, our annual event, Brisket King NYC, April 25th, brisketking.com. It is the hottest brisket event in America. So brisketking.com. And a big shout out, thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, engineer, David Tatasciore. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo.
Cheers.
All right.
All right.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.